It's 8:38. Good morning. My name is Bob. It's BS with Bob Schmidt, one of my favorite guests. You know, it's funny. You do the show long enough, and you end up getting some guests that you really just enjoy chatting with. And my next guest is one of those people. Janie Smith joining me this morning, author of a couple of books, Creative Competitive Advantage and Relevant Selling. And we've had conversation, I don't know, a couple times a year for the last few years, Janie. And I do appreciate you, and I appreciate your time. Before we jump into conversation about the just about business and books and selling and stuff, I just wanted to ask about you personally. With, you know, with Hurricane Irma that came through, everything okay down in Florida?
Yeah, everything's okay, you know, except for my car that ended up with palm tree across the hood and nearly every tree in the yard down or damaged. Other than that, everything's fine. Nobody was hurt, and that's really what matters.
How long does it take to have, because this is, probably isn't your first hurricane that you've lived through, how long does it take for things to go back to normal after something like this happens?
Well, it takes a while. When you have power, you don't have power for about a week, and mostly it's the cleanup. I mean, if you go through the neighborhoods down here, our neighborhood fortunately got cleaned up. All of the gigantic piles of tree limbs were cleaned up a few days ago. Mm-hmm. But if you go down some of the main streets still that the county and city are responsible for, there's these gigantic piles of trees, tree limbs, dead tree limbs everywhere. So, you know, they keep telling us it's going to take a while for them to pick them all up and get them out. So, you know, we're pretty much restored for the most part because of the constant fixing of FPL, Florida Power and Light. Some things go out last night. I lost my power yet again.
Oh, jeez.
You know, there's some after I call them aftershocks, but we're doing fine.
Did you stay through the storm?
I did. You know, I have all the shutters and the hurricane windows and everything that you need. But it was scary because where we live in Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood area, we got the outer bands for hours because here we got, as the storm headed west, mm-hmm. we got the outer bands. And then when it started going up the west coast, we still got the outer bands because Irma was so large. So constantly on the radio telling us another tornado warning. It felt like every 20 minutes we had one.
No.
It's a little bit frightening at night when that's happening, but you know, you get through it, and it's another day.
Well, do you have a basement?
No, it's so funny. I heard a TV announcer who came to the area for the storm, and he's saying, "Okay, tornado's coming through. Get in your basements," which is really hysterical because nobody in Florida has a basement.
Right. Well, that's what I thought. I thought with the hurricanes and stuff, with the flooding and all that, that you don't have a basement.
We have no basement.
And then you're talking about a tornado. Where do you go in a tornado in a hurricane?
They tell you to go into an inside room. So usually it's an inside bathroom that has no windows. That's really they want you to go. So, you know, you crawl in there with your cats and your dogs.
Oh, jeez.
You know, for the best.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'm glad that you ended up unscathed, and hopefully be able to get your car fixed sooner than later. I'm guessing it's going to be a long time running before everything gets back to normal down there, for sure.
Well, it's getting there, little by little, each day.
So, Janie Smith, my guest, Relevant Selling and Creating Competitive Advantage. And in the past, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things, and we keep kind of circling back to, like, customer value. How do we figure the customer value for our customers? I mean, if I'm going out and selling, you know, my widget, or if I'm selling my service of fixing cars or my radio station, whatever it is that you're working on selling, how do you know what your value of your customer is?
Well, let me just start by saying the first thing you need to acknowledge is that you don't know. So many business owners think they know what their customers value. Excuse me. And through research, we have proved again and again. I always tell people when I do keynote speeches, what I'm telling you is not my opinion. This is all based on scientific, projectable data. We have statistically valid sample sizes of market research that we've done of many, many industries where we go to the buyer, whether it's a B2C, if you're selling to a consumer, or to another business, and we've tested what the company's buying criteria is. When you buy XYZ widget or XYZ service, what is most important to you? And again, we go back to the company. We've got double-blind research. Double-blind means the respondent didn't know the company that's paying for the research. It's just when you buy this product or service.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back to the company and we say, we've tested 20 buying attributes. What do you and your team think are the three most valued attributes? And 95% get it wrong. Excuse me. that's a staggering number. 95% of businesses do not know their customers' top buying criteria, their prospects' top buying criteria. So, for example, the obvious one that I like to talk about is people will want to say immediately, and it's on websites, we're a family-owned business, or we've been in business for 150 years, or we care about the customer. Nobody believes that, or they don't care if you're a family business. It's not a buying criteria. We've proved that through research. Mm-hmm. And they don't believe you when you say you care about the customer, you're customer-focused or customer-centric. That has no meaning in today's world. You know, we live in a world of tweets, Twitter, communication, brief, quick, Facebook, small messages. Yet, most businesses have websites full of gobbledygook, what I call marketing speak, which we affectionately call blah, blah, blah. In today's world, nobody has attention span for that garbage. You've got to focus on the top buying criteria. You got to learn what it is, and you got to measure it and talk about it.
So how do you go about effectively measuring that? And then what you said that 95%, well, answer that question first, and I'll ask the follow-up question. How do you effectively measure that?
Okay, so here's the thing. So let's say I do your company or some company does double-blind market research for your company, and you've been talking about your 27 locations, your family business, and your longevity. And we come back, and the research says the number one thing they care about is quality. So I say to the company, how do you measure quality? And more often than not, the company CEO and sales and marketing management team says, we don't know. How should we measure that? We say, okay, let's start with this. What is your return rate? That's a good indicator of quality. And they go, don't know. So we've got one example of that. We said, all right, how about you measure it, your return rate, for the next 2 months, and then tell us what it is. So one company with a very high-ticket item said, well, we had 68 orders, an average of 69 orders the last 2 months, and 54 had issues.
That's a high amount.
They had no clue. They were sitting on a landmine because, number one, the most important thing was quality, meaning the customer doesn't want to call up because the thing is received broken or missing parts. Number two, if it is broken or missing parts, I want it handled immediately. And what we found out was this company's customer service people were not handling it. They were ignoring the customer. They were giving them, yeah, we'll get on it. Yeah, we'll get right back to you. And they weren't. So that's what I call companies sitting on a landmine. So take the same example, quality. In another company, quality was number one based on the research. It was a chemical company. We said, how do you measure it? I don't know. We have a bunch of data. We'll send it to you, but we don't know what it is. They send it to us. We mine the data. We go through some exercises, put it in an Excel pivot table to learn that their return rate was under 0.5% for the last 4 years and under 1% for 8 years.
Wow.
They're sitting on a gold mine of valuable data. That information should be in the hands of salespeople, because if the number one thing the customer cares about is quality and you've got proof that you've got good quality, then you need to be shouting it from the rooftops. So, you know, our headline is 95% of businesses don't know what their customers value, 85% don't measure it, and even more don't sell it. Even the 5% who guess right aren't selling the thing most valued by the customer. That leaves money on the table every single day.
Now, Janie, do most people value quality as their biggest go-to reason of why they buy something?
Not always. I mean, research is all over the place, depending on the product or the service. I mean, some will say the number one thing, and we see this often, is on-time delivery. You know, I don't care if a few of them are broken, but I better have most of them on time, you know, depending on the industry and what's needed. Mm-hmm. So I always ask groups, when I have large groups, I do keynotes, how many of you think on-time delivery of your product or service is important? And, of course, the whole room raises their hand. Okay, how many of you measure on time? Well, more than about half of them lower their hands now. And I say, okay, of those hands still remaining, because you measure it, how many of you use it consistently in marketing and sales? And I got like 3 hands left. You know, that's the missed opportunity.
Right.
And so it may not be quality. It could be on time. It could be accurate. We had one company. It was accurate order delivery. It could be response to complaints. It's how quickly you pick up the phone. It's do I have a sales rep at my fingertips? Lots of different attributes, but most companies don't know what it is in their industry for their company.
Now, Janie, is a lot of it dealing with managing expectations? Because, you know, so, like when you said you need your keynote and you ask the questions and people's hands, you know, come down and whatnot, is a lot of it, if you're, you can be measuring things, absolutely, but if you manage expectations, I look at Amazon, for example, with their, you know, with their business to consumer, and, you know, you sign up for 2-day shipping, you get it in 3 days, you're a little pissed. You get it in, get it into 2 days, and all of a sudden, your expectations are met, but in sometimes they have no control over why it took, you know, that third day, or, you know, you live in the boonies or whatever, and I would think that expectations need to be managed, I think, with a lot of businesses in order to keep their customers or their loyal followers happy.
Yes, that's a really good point, because we have discovered with a lot of different businesses, let's say research comes back and it's on-time delivery is number one. What we've learned in various industries, customers' definition of on-time delivery varies. So a lot of companies like to say, well, if you call the order in before 4 o'clock, we'll have it to you the next day. When the next day? I need it in the morning, but I don't get it till 5 o'clock. Or I need it, I don't want it in the morning because there's nobody here to handle it. I can't unload the truck. I want it in the afternoon. So on-time delivery may vary mm-hmm. for businesses. And so we have a lot of our clients who are finding out very specifically what does on-time delivery mean. So, yes, manage expectations to what the customer prefers. And then, you know, in your example with Amazon, if they promised it in 2 days and I got it in 3 days and that really sucks because I missed a birthday present, for example, mm-hmm. that's really bad. So, you know, Amazon is so gigantic, I don't know that they care.
You know what, I really think they do, because I've had issues where it's taken an extra day or they've shipped the wrong thing instead, or I've had something that broke actually after I use it for a while, and they have been at the utmost, probably the best customer service that I've dealt with of any company that I've probably ever dealt with.
Well, that's really good news. I have not had any of those experiences. I haven't had it late or broken, so I haven't had a chance to see if it was fixed. So I'm really glad to hear that. And yes, if they weren't so big, one of the things I would, another company, I might say, and maybe they can do this, they probably have the analytics to do this, I think they should make statements like, we've got 97% on time, and when we're late, we fix it within 24 hours, or we make amends within 24 hours. I think that's important for people to say, yeah, every business is going to screw up occasionally, but how long does it take us to make it right?
Right.
And I think that's an important metric as well that they should be touting. Well, I don't know if Amazon would do it, but certainly some smaller businesses need to do that.
Well, are they at a point right now where they just like whatever? where they don't need to let people know that information they've been the juggernaut of what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, when you're somewhat of a monopoly, which they almost are, detriment of most retailers and big box and everybody else. I mean, you see the stores closing. I mean, we just saw a week or two ago Toys R Us. Amazon tried to negotiate with them, and they wouldn't negotiate, and the negotiation was get more toys, not just what you have, because the consumers want more, and they said, no, we're sticking to our guns. Long story short, they didn't change at Amazon's request. They tried suing Amazon. That didn't work, and then they went bankrupt. So, you know, it's about the customer, and Toys R Us missed that. They missed that they needed to change their model to fit the customer as requested by Amazon, the biggest distributor in the world. So companies need to understand that as well.
Right. Janie, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, I enjoy speaking with you, and I always learn a lot. Unfortunately, I'm running out of time here. I do want to mention the books, Relevant Selling and Creating Competitive Advantage. Where do we find these awesome little books?
Oh, on Amazon or my website, which is smartadvantage.com. SMART, smartadvantage, all one word, .com. We have it in Amazon, easiest way to get it.
As we just spoke about Amazon.
Yep, how appropriate. And quickly, you can get it quickly.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that something like Amazon will end up putting the moms and pops out of business?
I think in many cases, in many industries, yes. Because what happens is when they are the only distributor and they start hammering away, which they already are, at mom and pop margins, it gets harder and harder for them to compete. You know, I know one small company that is using Amazon to distribute, and it's working really well for him at the moment. He makes better margins there. But I think over time that may shift, and it's hard to say. But I think as long as Amazon starts hammering away at pricing, it's going to be hard for most of them to survive.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with you there. Janie, I appreciate your time this morning. Can we get something set up again for another day, too?
Absolutely.
And then also,
absolutely, Bob.
Could you give me a call, because I can't put you on hold, so we can talk a little bit about what we talked about before you went on the air?
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. I hope to talk to you very soon. Janie Smith, my guest this morning, creating competitive advantage and relevant selling, my guest here on today's Talk 1490. 8:54 is the time. My name is Bob. It's BS with Bob Schmidt. Stick around. We'll wrap up the hour here in a minute.